This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Raise your hand if you're baking bread during this stay-at-home time, or if you'd like to, but you don't know how, or you really want to make your own sourdough starter. How cool would that be? Ken Albala is professor of history at University of the Pacific, and he's a food historian. He's going to literally give us the uplift today with a little bit of sort of verbal yeast, shall we say, and explaining how to make a sourdough start. Hi, Professor. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
First of all, why is everybody so into bread and making bread during this pandemic?
Well, it's a reaction to our fear of gluten that has been raging for the past decade or so. And I think people need comfort, and they have a lot of times. And I think the idea of baking is so appealing that people are doing it. Just take up that time.
Say a bit more about that reaction to the fear of gluten. Are we swinging back the pendulum? Is that it?
I hope so. Bread is obviously very nutritious, and there are people with celiac disease and gluten allergies. But I think for many people, it was really just a fashion to avoid carbohydrates. And, your body uses carbohydrates very well. So I think I think we're swinging back toward bread.
But you must be astonished, too, by how many people are trying it and tasting and posting all their bread pictures.
This is true. You know, I think, though, that the printed directions make it unnecessarily complicated. People think you have to, treat it like a pet and sing to it, which I don't think harms it. But I think, it's much, much simpler than people think. They sometimes use potatoes, or sometimes they'll use fresh grapes, thinking that the powdery yeast is necessary. You really only need flour and water. And I think as long as you're not using chlorinated water right from the tap, use like spring water or distilled water, just regular, ordinary flour and water, you put it on the countertop. You feed it every day, a couple of tablespoons of flour and water, and in about 2 weeks, it'll start bubbling. It becomes a colony. The yeast is actually already on the flour. It's on your hands. It's in the air. But what makes it interesting is it's a colony not just of yeast, but also of the lactobacillus bacteria. And if you live in the right place, we actually don't in the Central Valley, but if you're out in the Bay Area, you can get a really nice sour, San Francisco type sourdough. I think in the Central Valley, you're just going to get a nice leaven. It'll be pleasantly, slightly sour, but it'll have a lot of oomph. And I think if all you need, you don't need to put it in the refrigerator. As long as you bake every week, you'll be using about a third of that in your dough every week. And then you just keep it on a bowl on the counter and cover it with cloth, and be sure to name it. That's very important. My starter's name is St. Agatha. That's when she was born. But otherwise, it's really just simple. And as long as you know how to bake, the sourdough just gives you such a nice flavor and texture. And it's, it costs maybe 50 cents, in flour every time you bake.
You went through that very quickly. So let's go back to the very beginning. Let's say I want to do a sourdough starter. Take me very, very slowly just through those first steps.
Okay, first, don't use a measuring cup. I think that's there's absolutely no reason you need to measure any of the ingredients. And I would say even if you're baking, don't bother. Just take some flour, put it in a bowl, and take some distilled or spring water and pour it over it. And so you get something like a pancake batter kind of consistency or thick cream. And you just cover the bowl with a dish towel, leave it there. And in the next morning, feed it a little more. And then the next morning, feed it a little more. And then it'll start to bubble. And there often is a point where it smells really bad. And I think a lot of people think, uh-oh, it's bad. I'm going to kill myself. And they throw it away. That's a natural thing. That happens when the yeast and the bacteria are trying to live with each other for a while. And eventually what happens is the bacteria lowers the pH way down. So it gets acidic. And nothing else will grow on there. No mold, nothing bad can happen. If it does, you'll know immediately. But a bad smell is not any indication of that. After about 2 weeks, it just starts being really happy. And what you do is you'll take about a third of that out, mix it with flour, more water. You don't need anything else, just salt. And then feed your starter again. And you just leave it on the counter, and it works perfectly fine.
It doesn't have to be in a warm place. It doesn't have to be in sunlight, anything like that.
Nope, no requirements at all. In fact, it's, even this, you could put it in a jar if you want, just as long as it has exposure to oxygen, because you want it to breathe, and it will actually expand. Sometimes it'll go over the bowl if it's really excited. It is a living thing, it's a community, And I think what we, for the past century or so.
Oops, did we lose your, there we go.
In the past century or so, we have just been so afraid of microbes because we fear that we're going to get sick from them. And I think people, you know, pickling and curing meat and making cheese and all this stuff, people have been doing that for thousands and thousands of years. And we just lost that knowledge because we got suddenly afraid of microbes and we thought, oh, we have to leave this to professionals. We have to use the packet of yeast from the store. I can't use wild yeast. And I think we've just kind of lost those skills that are very, very simple to do. I mean, pickling, you just throw things in a jar with salt water. There's nothing to it.
So I am trying to imagine a very beginner question. And as you say, you keep feeding your starter some flour. Somebody might wonder, does that mean I mix it in to that batter? Or do I just kind of sprinkle it on top and let it sit there?
Yeah, you mix it in. Sure. Flour and water, you just, as long as you keep that pancake-like consistency, it'll be fine. And it really doesn't matter how much you add in. I usually do a couple of tablespoons. And the pleasant thing is that you don't have to worry if you're suddenly out of yeast. The very big difference, though, with baking this way and baking with commercial yeast is the yeast takes a lot longer. And when you let the bread rise, it can take 12 hours. You can let it go overnight. And that's a good thing. I think it develops flavors. It breaks down the proteins. It makes it more digestible. And I've heard from many people that the bread that is made commercially, they have trouble digesting. It gives them stomach ache and whatever. And bread that is long fermented, it actually doesn't. European bread doesn't because it's made this way, usually with a long ferment. So as long as you have the patience to leave your bread out on the counter overnight, it will rise, and then you just, you know, throw it in the oven, and it is more digestible and tastes better. You get a much better crust.
Professor, we've got to go, but I'm going to post a link to your website because you give baking lessons on Zoom, and you're all into Jell-O. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruriak, and everything will be on the website. Happy baking.
Thank you. You too.